The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240, coming to you live from the WGBB studios here on beautiful Long Island. It is Sunday, August 13, 2017, and beautiful weekend. Beautiful today at least, but we are in hour two of our radio program. Mr. Brian Graves on the other side of the glass this evening. I am your host, Tony Stabile, and we have a great show for you tonight. We're going to start off, we're going to have Dennis Wozak, the Jets beat writer from the AP. He's going to come on at 9:10, talk about Jets camp, what's going on, Christian Hackenberg, Quincy Enunwa, and everything that's going on with the New York Jets. And then at 9:35, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to have SNYT.TV and the Seven Line Army's Brian Ernie. He is the co-host of the Blue and Orange Thing podcast. New podcast for the Mets, had Mike Piazza on recently. Great show. Should definitely check it out. But we're going to talk to Brian in the bottom part of the hour, and we're going to discuss what's going on with the amazing Mets. Lots of stuff going on in New York sports. Let's do a quick little recap here. Yanks are playing right now the rubber game of their series with the Red Sox. Chris Sale on the mound for the Red Sox. Guy's having an outstanding year, pitching against Jordan Montgomery, who unfortunately got hit in the head yesterday during batting practice. Thank goodness he's okay. Was listening to the game on the way over, it seems that there was no score when I came in, and I've been a little too busy to check on it just to this point. So we'll see what happens with the Yanks up 2.5 games on a wild card, depending on what happens with today's finals. They are, 4.5 behind the Red Sox. So, you know, the division may be out of their reach, but the wild card definitely seems to be heading in their favor. Amazing, because they have not played well since pretty much the middle of June. And, to see them still ahead in the wild card by 2.5 games, at this point in time. So, it's a good thing. And, Yankees look like, they have a decent shot at, making the postseason. Mets, on the other hand, are heading in the opposite direction. They played the Phillies, who they just seem to absolutely destroy nowadays. A big week with them. We'll talk a little bit about that with Brian Ernie, with the trades of Jay Bruce and Neil Walker. The calling up of Ahmed Rosario, who is starting to hit his stride now, hit the game-winning home run on Friday. Opposite field shot, no doubt or two, on the opposite field. Dominic Smith came up this week, hasn't set anything on fire yet, but I love the way his swing looks. He looks like he's going to be a good ball player. So, give him a little time to get adjusted, and, I'm really looking forward to watching these two kids play in the infield for the next few years. And Michael Conforto, who, continues after last season. You had to be concerned if you were a Met fan just to seeing how he played last season. Came into camp this year with a renewed attitude, forced his way onto the team, forced his way into the lineup, has been batting leadoff, which is not his position. You see over the last few games where he's been hitting in the middle of the order, and the guy can do damage. So great for him, and another rising star in New York in Michael Conforto. The Jets win their preseason opener. Don't get too excited. Might be the only game they win this year. We'll talk with Dennis about that in just a few minutes. Got a chance to see Christian Hackenberg. Not terrible, not great, I guess. Obviously you want to see some more of him. It's a preseason game, so, obviously you can't really go by anything, but, good to see him out there. Big injury loss for the Jets in the beginning part of camp was Quincy, and then one goes down for the season. Will the Jets bring in another wide receiver, a vet? Who knows? It'd probably be in their best interest to do so. You don't want to turn your fans off in week three. Not that most Jet fans aren't aware of what's going on, but you want to see what's going to happen there. So we'll have a discussion about that with Dennis. The Giants lose their preseason opener 20-12 to the Steelers. Got a chance to see all three of the backup quarterbacks play. Geno Smith I can't say that he played well or great, but he definitely looked, the offense looked much more comfortable with him out there than the other two quarterbacks that played. It'd be interesting to see what happens with the Giants, backup quarterback situation. Listen, the Giants are going to be a good team this year. You know, they have the pieces in place. They played well last year. You know, it kind of depends on Eli. You know, I know the guy is an iron man of football. Never misses a play, never misses a game. So, you know, is that streak going to continue, or is his luck going to run out at some point? Who knows? But that's why this backup quarterback position, as Eli gets a little older, is going to become more and more important. So Geno, everyone knows he's got the talent. Does he have, you know, the capability of keeping his head on straight during the game? Can he run, the huddle? Can he keep his teammates focused? Will they take him seriously? There's a whole bunch of questions that he had that happened with the Jets. But, as most Jets fans will tell you, that's not saying all that much. So we'll see what happens with Geno Smith. A little bit of basketball. You had the Knicks sign Michael Beasley this week. Seems like they're preparing for the inevitable when Carmelo Anthony is actually dealt. There was a report earlier this week that GM Scott Perry has been talking with the Rockets a little bit more about maybe moving Melo again. So maybe we'll see some traction with that leading into training camp, but we don't know for sure. So at this point, Carmelo Anthony still is going to be with the Knicks, and we'll see what happens there. The Brooklyn Nets acquire Alan Crabb, who is a guy who they signed to a tremendous offer sheet just 12 months ago, almost to the day that they acquired him. He didn't have a great year in Portland, but yet was still kind of coming off the bench. I think the Nets are going to give him a chance to kind of play, have a regular spot in the lineup. I don't know how they're going to do that between Jeremy Lin and D'Angelo Russell in the backcourt. So, I mean, that's going to be an interesting three-way rotation there between those three. But I guess we'll see what's happening there with Kenny Atkinson. But we're going to go now to Dennis Wozniak. He's going to come on. Dennis is the beat writer for the New York Jets for the AP, and he joins us now. Dennis, what's up, man?
Not too much. How you doing?
All right, brother. How's everything going?
Pretty good. One preseason game in the books, and we'll see what happens here.
that's going to be the theme of the Jets season, I believe, this year, my friend. I think we're going to be saying a lot of, well, let's just see what happens. Because it seems that has been the take of General Manager Mike Maccagnan. Just let's get your general thoughts about the first few days of camp and what you've seen leading up into this weekend's preseason opener.
I think that, you know, all the focus has been on Hackenberg. You know, really, that's where all the focus has been, the quarterbacks. Not so much McCown, not so much Petty, it's Hackenberg. How has he looked? And he's had some moments where you go, oh, you know, hey, that's all right. And then other moments where it's just like, man, this is, oof, it's rough. And, you know, and I think the thing is, Tony, you know, this is basically like a rookie year for Hackenberg. So he is going through almost like the rookie hiccups in camp.
Right.
And I think what you saw last night, what we all saw, was some positives. It wasn't great. There are a lot of things he still needs to work on. But compared to a year ago at this time, I mean, the guy didn't even get on the field, you know, in preseason, you know, until late. It just, it's one of those things where you gotta take it for what it is. You have to be optimistic about the fact that he was running the offense, even in a conservative way. At least he was out there getting his feet wet, you know. So I think what you've seen is a little bit, and I wouldn't say a jump, but a move forward from what we saw early in camp, where it was just like, hey, you know, is this guy gonna be anything? To, you know, a guy who came in, they didn't score any points. You know, with him in there, obviously 7-3.
Wasn't a lot of points to be scored.
Right, exactly. But, you know, he did some good things. There were some, you know, not so good things. But this is what you want. This, in preseason, this is where you're going to see if this guy could take that next step. So, you know, so far, okay, you know, for Hackenberg in this first game.
Yeah, I mean, considering that the lack of playing time last year, the fact that he was out there and seems to know somewhat of it looks as if he has somewhat of an idea of what he's doing out there, it's got to be at least a little bit impressive. And he does show that he has what's the word I'm looking for? He does show that he has some rapport, it seems, with Robbie Anderson, which is going to be a big thing, because it looks like Anderson's going to be a focal point of the offense this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think while Hackenberg didn't have a lot of snaps last season, in camp, I think guys that he would have worked with were guys such as Robbie Anderson and Sherron Peake and Jalen Marshall to an extent early on before Marshall really, started coming on last summer. Some of these guys who are in camp now projected to be key receivers, well, Hackenberg's worked with them quite a bit over the last, 12 months or so. So, I think that's a positive. I think Robbie did a good job last night of showing, hey, yes, he can play. Because through camp early on, the first portion at least, he kind of struggled. And I believe it was the first practice after Inunua was out for the year with the neck injury. He came out and really had a good practice, because up until that point, it had been like, whoa, is this guy capable of being a number two or number three, let alone a number one? But I think he'll be fine. I think the speed is what gives him an edge. You saw that on that play there. So just to get back to Hackenberg, he's worked with some of these guys, so that will help him in his development. I don't know that there are a lot of guys who were playing late in the game will end up on this team in the end, but that remains to be seen. This thing is wide open, and really, Todd Bowles talks about competition and this year, this is the time where that coach speak really plays in, because who knows who's going to make this team?
Right.
The beat writers and I, we do before the first game of the first preseason game. We do our 53-man roster. This is the toughest one. This is my 12th year on the beat, and this is tough because you don't know who, and the thing is, first cut.
There's no veterans.
Well, that's the thing. So you can argue for pretty much anybody, and you could say, well, I think this guy's going to make the first wave of cuts, but then on the cut down, after everybody's claiming guys off waivers, well, then that guy might get cut. So it's really wide open. As far as this roster. So I do believe that there are going to be guys that you had no idea or no inkling would make this team at this point.
I see it, because, you always, like you said, when you make that 53-man roster, there's certain positions that are just buttoned down and that's it. The Jets have maybe like five of those. So it's going to be, it's the two guys they drafted in the first and second round, and then maybe Leo Williams and, even, you don't even know if Sheldon Richardson's going to be around. So.
True.
I'm going to assume at this point that McCown is probably going to be the week one starter. I mean, can we make that assumption at this point?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. And that doesn't mean he'll be the starter the whole year, but I think people ask me this question a lot. Well, if they're in this youth movement and they've revamped the roster and they're rebuilding, why have a 38-year-old quarterback out there? And really, I think the simple answer is somebody needs to direct traffic out there.
Yeah.
So you got a guy who can direct traffic in Josh McCown. You saw that first drive looked pretty good. That's something that, they'll use some tight ends. It looks like they'll even try to use some of the fullbacks and that, kind of thing. It's a safe, conservative offense. And once Hackenberg catches up, which they, hope that happens at some point, well, then you make that move. But until then, you got to have somebody competent leading the offense. So I think McCown starts in week one, and then, if Hackenberg continues to progress, then maybe, by the bye, maybe that's when they make that decision.
And McCown is a great teammate. He's a great guy to have around these young quarterbacks. I would love to have had a guy like that around Geno, in his first season, because the guy knows exactly, how to be a pro, what it takes to be, an NFL quarterback, and what have the respect of his teammates. So, I mean, there are worse guys to have around your young quarterbacks, and your young players, especially a team that's in a full blown rebuild like the Jets are at this point.
No doubt about it. And I think you saw a little bit of that on the sideline yesterday during the game.
Yes.
When Hackenberg came over and McCown's like talking him up a little. I think sometimes the mentor tag gets overblown. Mm-hmm. You know,
definitely.
You talk about a quarterback. Oh, you know, they have young quarterbacks. They need a mentor. I think these guys look up to coaches. You know, that's who they're looking up to. But when you have a guy who's been there, been around, done it, he's been on both ends. He's been a starter. He's been a backup. He's been, you know, a rookie trying to make it. He's been a veteran journeyman. That's Josh McCown. He's done all these things. And from anyone that you talk to at any of his stops, they all say the same thing. The dude is a good guy.
Yep.
And that's the one thing that really, a truly humble guy who knows his place. He's here, wants to play. Also has no problem being a mentor. He knows that beyond this, he's going to be a coach someday. He talks, the way he carries himself.
Oh, you can hear it right in his sound quotes, definitely.
Yeah. The way, his knowledge of the game and things that the way he talks about the game. So, this really is a good thing for both Hackenberg and Petty, too. So just having this guy for a year, I think, is great. And I think at some point he'll start off as a quarterback coach. And, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, beyond this, you'll see a lot of Josh McCown on a sideline, you know, in a coaching role.
Right. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. And is there a spot on this team for Bryce Petty?
Well, I'll tell you this. In full disclosure, I did not have Bryce Petty making the team.
Mm.
And my reasoning is this. I think that right now they believe Hackenberg is ahead of Petty.
Wow.
Petty would have to do a lot to surpass him at this point because Hackenberg's getting the second team reps,
right,
and he's gotten some of the first team early on in camp.
Mm.
They say it's an open competition. I just don't buy that Petty is a viable candidate in this competition. I think they've seen enough to know that he could be a backup. He's not a starter, you know. So, yeah, I don't think they think of him ahead of Hackenberg. So here's the thing. So Josh McCown is your week one starter.
Mm.
Hackenberg's your backup. Well, I don't know that you need a Bryce Petty as your number three.
Right.
You know, so I think if they do anything, they could very well go into week one with just the two quarterbacks. But if anything, you might have a guy who has some experience and serves as a number three and just is kind of in there in the mix. But they're going to want to have Hackenberg work as much as he can throughout the season, getting the snaps until he's ready. And I just don't see Petty, unless he has a terrific final three games, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, pal. I don't think they're gonna do this whole three quarterback thing again, and you know, I don't see where it makes sense for him at this point. He needs to, you know, it's gonna be McCown and Hackenberg, and I think that those guys eventually, and I'm sure you'll agree with me here, that they'll flip flop at one point or another. That Hackenberg will become the starter at some point during the 2017 NFL season. Let's switch to another part of the offense. We talked a little bit about Quincy and was in injury, and he's now obviously out for the entire season. Do you see them going after a vet and to replace him, or do you think they're just gonna go with the mix that they have at this point?
I really think that they're going to go with the mix that they have. I think they're intrigued by the bunch that they have. I think they like it. You know, Robbie Anderson is there. Chris Harper, another guy. You know, Jalen, he'll be out for the first four games. So, I mean, that's a guy they're going to count on after that, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other guys, you know, that are Darius Stewart, Chad Hansen, you know, guys like that. I think they're going to give a chance. Marcus Wilson is a veteran. He's a guy, he doesn't have a lot of catches, but he actually has the most of anybody on this roster right now.
Which is scary.
You know, through a career, that is scary. But I think what could happen is one of those, you know, the Sunday after the cuts, where guys shake free, guys are cut, and then McCagnan goes through those names, and we might see some turnover there. You might see a couple of more familiar faces, guys who have something on their resumes, who they bring in to give, you know, whoever the starter is, McCown or Hackenberg, a couple of veteran presences out there.
Actually, I like the Darius Stewart's one reception. He took a guy out basically with one arm. So I'm kind of interested to see him play. And the other question I have is Chad Hansen, who they took. I believe they took him in the fourth round. What have you seen from him over the first couple of days?
Well, I think they worked both of those guys in gradually into the offense because they were both coming off of injuries. Stewart, we've seen a little more. Hansen is starting to come on a little bit more, getting more active. They're rookies, though. You know, they're still learning the offense. But Stewart, I've seen them do different things with. You know, so I think he'll be an exciting part of this offense. I could see them, you know, handing the ball off to him, lining him up, having him go in the slot, having him go wide. I think he's a guy that could be a real, you know, tool, you know, for them,
right,
you know, to use in many different ways. Hansen, you know, maybe he is the guy who becomes Decker. You know, maybe he's that guy, or maybe, you know, a number three, number four type guy. He's got some speed. I mean, look what he did at Cal last year.
Yeah.
You know, 92 receptions. The guy could catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as he's healthy, I think both of those guys will be on the opening day, you know, active list. I think they'll both, you know, get some run there. So I think both of those guys have promising futures. And, you know, you take wide receivers third, fourth round, you hope that they're contributors. You know, if not week one, you know, pretty close to, you know, beginning of the season.
Oh, that's good. So you mean at this draft class, we might have actually a couple of guys that stay on the team for more than one season? I mean, is that possible?
It's very possible. I mean, especially, I'll tell you this much, at least the first two picks.
Well, thank you very much, because you just led into my next question, and that's about Jamal Adams and Marcus May. I think with the Hackenberg thing, it's kind of good because these guys are flying a little bit under the radar, but, both, you know, if you listen to Todd Bowles and you listen to you guys, you know, in the media talk about it, these guys have been very impressive since the minute they walked onto the field. So, tell us a little bit about what these two guys have been doing.
I love the fact that these two guys, you always hear from GMs and coaches, you hear them talk up their players, first round picks, second round picks, they're leaders. You know, they were leaders on their teams in college and that kind of thing. These guys are. You could tell already.
Right.
They have no problem being vocal. Jamal Adams is out there a couple of practices in and he's yelling. You know, he's yelling across at the offense. He's yelling, talking up the defense. He's got that presence already.
Right.
And the kid can play.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, obviously he hasn't played in a regular season game and then, you know, but you could see that there's something special there. You
mm-hmm.
could certainly see it. And Marcus May, he's had some of the biggest hits of all, you know, in camp.
Mm, I've been reading about him.
Some guys. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's pretty cool that those two guys are roommates. As soon as they got drafted, they've been rooming together. I think they...
Why not? They're playing side by side. Why not, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think they've already got a great rapport. And they both have those leadership qualities. I think May is a little bit quieter than Adams, but, you know, you talk about cornerstones of your defense in the secondary. Well, you could have two guys here who are athletic, they're leaders, they're playmakers. You know, that part is very promising. So you combine those two guys with some of the guys that you have on the front line on the defense. Well, those are the positives that you could take from this team right off the bat.
Mm.
The defensive line and the safeties.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you 100%. I mean, those are the positions that you have guys who are, like you said before, locked in. You know, that's really where it comes down to. Since you've been at camp and watching what's been going on, any surprises over the first couple of days? Anybody who said you really didn't have on your radar, or maybe they were a fringe player and you've seen them and said, wow, this kid is actually, this looks pretty good?
You know, there's one guy that I think of right off the bat, and that's Frank Beltre, a linebacker, who's undrafted free agent. He's I believe he played in the CFL for a couple of years.
Mm.
He is a guy who's kind of, you know, jumped out. He's flashed a bit. Unfortunately for him, he didn't play last night, and that's because I believe he has a groin injury. But he's looked good so far in practice and in camp. That's one guy I didn't know anything about, really. I don't think anybody really did, and he kind of stands out in practices. I think Dylan Donahue has also stood out in practice, and he's another guy who didn't play last night.
Right.
So, yeah, so those two guys have stood out to me. Gabe Marks, the wide receiver, he's had some really good days in practice. He's been banged up a little bit, so some of those guys have been standouts early on in camp. Chris Harper also has had a pretty good camp so far.
Right. That, so, Harper's name you hear consistently. So,
yeah.
So all right, so that's good. You know, you'd like to see the guys who are having standout practices actually get into the game, so they have a chance of making the team. So, that's always helpful. So now, just let's go to the flip side of that. Is there anybody that you thought was locked in that looks like now may be a problem? We talked about Bryce Petty. Are there any other guys, you know, I know that Steve McClendon is a guy who, you know, it's been talked about for a while whether or not he was going to make the team. Anybody that you could see that's in trouble?
I think because of his contract situation, I don't think he will be, but Buster Skrine just hasn't really kind of, you know, just looked great during, you know, practice and that kind of thing. So, I'm trying to think of some other guys who,
there was a rumor the other day that Skrine was being shopped. Have you heard anything like that?
I could see that, and I could also see why teams wouldn't really be interested. You know, he's a guy, when he came from Cleveland, you know, they put him in the nickel spot, and that was perfect. That was, he played pretty well. Asking him to do more than that, it really uncovers some of the deficiencies that he has, you know, in coverage, and he's a, you know, he gets called for a lot of penalties. I know Jet fans are, you know, have screamed his name many times at the TV and in the stadium because he just, you know, it's one of those kind of things with him. He's one of those veterans. McClendon, I think they like a lot. He's another guy who's kind of a leader, kind of keeps that group together.
Right.
And I think they'll keep him around unless a guy like, you know, I'm trying to think, like Mike Pinnell, who I think is going to make the team anyway. Maybe like a Patrick Gamble, from Georgia Tech, or one of those young guys that they brought into camp. Even Devin Still, somebody might knock him out, McClendon, but I think he stays. So, and the one guy that I thought was not having a great camp, like I mentioned before, was Robbie Anderson until recently. So, I think he'll be fine. I think he just had a tough start to camp.
All right. Well, I think it's going to be a long season regardless, Dennis, unfortunately. But listen, man, it's always great to talk to you. I can't thank you enough for coming on. Great stuff as always. And, you know, enjoy the rest of camp. And I'll talk to you down the road, brother. Thanks so much.
You got it. Anytime, Tony. Take care, man.
Thanks, Dennis. Dennis Wozniak from the AP. He's the Jets beat writer. Thanks for coming on with us and talking a little bit of Jets football. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk with Brian Ernie about some Mets baseball. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Sports Talk 1240 WGBB here, Long Island. We are back. Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. We're going to get to Brian Ernie in just a minute. Just one thing I want to talk about before we talk to Brian. Some dear friends of mine have come across a tragedy in their life. Two guys who I've been friends with basically for the last 15, 17 years now. Their son, their slash nephew, their brothers, James Lodato is been recently diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer, and this is a tremendous issue, you know, for these are good people. These are people who are you know, they do all the right things. They're friends not only of mine, but you know, a whole group of my friends. And it's terrible what they're going to have to go through. James is already, little James, 6 years old, is going to have to start treatments, and there is going to be a considerable expense for these people to have to bear. Not only dealing with the fact that their 6 year old is now diagnosed with cancer and is going to have to start treatments basically immediately. So they have a GoFundMe page to help with some of the medical expenses. I implore people to read what's been written in about this, what's going on with little James, and if you can even donate a dollar, $5, whatever it is, to help this family in need, it would be greatly, greatly appreciated. You can find the link for it on my Twitter profile page. It's the pinned tweet. So go read about it, see what I'm talking about if you can. Like I said, nobody wants to have to deal with something like this, and every little bit, if we can all get together and just help out a little bit, we can try to make this a little bit easier on this family going through a very tough time. With that being said, we're gonna bring on a guy who is a friend of mine, he's a writer for SNY.TV, and he is the co-host of a new podcast, with the Seven Line. It is called The Orange and Blue Thing. And here we are with Brian Ernie. Brian, how are you, my friend?
What's up, man? How are you?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Everything's great. Everything's great. It's another gorgeous Long Island summer, you know? Life is good.
Weather's been outstanding, hasn't it?
It has. It really has. And, you know, we've just been crazy at home. It's, we have a, let's see, 10-month-old almost. So
yes.
At home. So it's been an interesting summer, to say the least.
Yes, it has been. A lot of new beginnings for you. Congratulations on the baby.
Thank you.
Spoken to you in a bit. And,
yes.
Congratulations on the podcast. It's been great. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with it.
It has been fun. So, back in December, we kicked this thing off, right after last season. Darren asked me, hey man, you know, Darren Meaden from the Seven Line said, I want to start a podcast. And I'm like, cool. Oh, you want me to do it with you? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, he knew from SNY that I had done some of this stuff in the past, and it was a really loose format. We didn't know what we wanted to do, but the week in between Christmas and New Year's, we kicked it off. We've been doing it at his house for the first 33 weeks. And now, we're taking this week off to pack everything up and move into, a space in his new warehouse in Hop Hog. So it's really exciting. It's basically a show that we call Orange and Blue Thing because it's about the Mets, obviously, because he has a Mets brand and we're both Mets fans, but It's about anything that kind of pertains to the Mets. We're not just going to rattle off stats at you. We're going to talk about kind of the community around being a Mets fan, which obviously the Seven Line has tapped into so well. And then, of course, the team and anything else that kind of piques our interest, including what's going on in our own personal lives. So, I mean, it's a ton of fun for me. It's a chance to hang out with a really good friend for an hour, hour and a half, and drink some beers, and we have fun with it.
And you had the transcendent Met of the last 20 years, Mike Piazza, on just recently. Talk about what that was like, being able to interview Mike and having a few minutes with him.
It was crazy. I mean, that's kind of the thing about sort of living in Darren's world. I'm just like kind of along for the ride here. So it's great because he goes, hey, should I ask Mike Piazza if he wants to do the show? And I'm sitting there like, of course, this guy is, you know, my boyhood hero. Of course I want to talk to Mike Piazza. And he DMs him on Twitter, and Mike gets back to him a couple weeks later and says, yeah, sure, if like I'm getting in this day, can we do it this? And it was totally surreal. I mean, anything that you can possibly imagine. Obviously, at this point, I've gotten to cover the Mets. I've been in the clubhouse. I've done that whole thing. I've walked down on the field. And nothing prepares you to talk to a Hall of Fame catcher that you grew up kind of idolizing.
Yep.
So it was unbelievable. And he was so gracious with his time and was an incredible interview. And we really were passionate about not just doing the same Mike Piazza questions that that people have already heard the answers to. So we tried to ask him a little different stuff. We had him on for episode 31, and that's available, and all past episodes are available at facebook.com/7line. And of course on SoundCloud or iTunes, just go to orangeandbluething.com and you can get all the, audio archives, or, you can subscribe on iTunes. So I'm very proud of the interview and how it went. But I mean, I had so much nervous energy. We simulcast this thing, you know, live on Facebook Live, and then we rip down the audio. So if you watch the video portion of it, you can see me like nervously twitching and shaking my leg and all this stuff because I have to be cool. I can't fan out because I'm talking to Mike Piazza.
Right, right.
I was a little kid inside. It was great.
Yeah, man, I know. Getting into this line of work, you have to be prepared for things like that. And, you know, I remember the first time I met Mike Bossy, it was exactly the same thing. I was like a dribbling idiot when I met him. And, so I get it, brother. It's cool. It's great that you got a chance to talk to him and get his perspective on things and spend a few minutes. And that's something that you'll remember for forever. I mean, that's awesome.
Absolutely. It's harder than you think too, to not let the fan in you get out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You try to conduct yourself with that decorum, but you have to, and the guys respect that. I think they enjoy when you're a fan also.
Yes.
Especially depending on who the guy is, but I think Mike got a kick out of how much of a fan I was. I teased him because I really did dye my hair blonde when he dyed his hair blonde because Mike Piazza did it. And
right.
I think he got just a kick out of that I would actually say it. But, you know, when you have to conduct yourself with the professionalism that you would come to expect from somebody who's interviewing Mike Piazza, that's a privilege to get to do that. So it's tough. It's a lot tougher than people think it is. But, yeah, it was still a surreal experience, and I'm eternally thankful that I got a chance to do it.
Yeah, and guys like Piazza have always been so great with the media, and they're so comfortable in front of the microphone. So, you know, it's almost as if they're doing you a favor by putting you at ease while you're talking to them. And I don't care if you've been doing this for 5 minutes or 25 years. You stand in the presence of a guy with, you know, that is Mike Piazza, and you know, yes, there's going to be nerves, and it's going to be, you know, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but you're going to be uncomfortable having that conversation because, you know, you're standing in the presence of a player who is going to be considered one of the greatest players of all time forever. So
yeah.
To be enshrined in Cooperstown, you know, you see some of the names when you walk through that hall of plaques. So I still get goosebumps. I've been there 10 times in my life, and I still get goosebumps every time that it happens. So I know where you're at, man. It's a beautiful thing. Let's switch it up a little bit. Let's talk about this team, if you even want to do that anymore. So, let's discuss, some of the things, big things. Two guys, two main, pieces were traded this week in Jay Bruce and Neil Walker. Give me your thoughts on the two deals that the Mets made in the last couple of days.
Well, look, I mean, there was a lot of controversy around the Bruce trade, because people felt that maybe they could have gotten a better deal from the Yankees. And why that fell apart, we'll really never know. You know, mostly people say it's because of finances, and that's a bad look for the Mets considering the last five, six, 7 years of history that ownership has. But let's face it, I mean, if you were going to get any kind of prospect of value back from the Yankees, and you were going to get two of them, I don't think $1 million is standing in anybody's way.
You would hope not, but I don't think Sandy is that stupid. That's for sure. I think Sandy's got a much better head on his much better head on his shoulders than that.
And look, I'm not gonna, you know, I should be open and say I'm a part-time SNY employee, and as a result, I think people view that I might have a conflict, but I really don't. I mean, I've never met a Wilpon in my life, and I don't want to just stick up for ownership here, but.
I don't think SNY does that. I think SNY is as bad as unbiased as they come.
They're fantastic. They've never said to me, you know, don't run anything. It's what I was writing for Mets Blog that was critical of the team. I think they're very fair in their on-air coverage of the team. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not just sticking up for ownership here, but they spent over $150 million on this team. So it's not like they're spending $65 million and hoping for the best here.
Right.
I think this is a proven veteran team with a lot, with some stud young pitching. They went out. They didn't do the cheap thing. You know, they tendered Neil Walker qualifying offer. They could have very easily just said, hey, we have Jose Reyes in-house making the league minimum because Colorado's paying the rest of his salary. We're just going to go with him and TJ Rivera. It's like, mate, they didn't. They went and they invested in the player. Could they have done more? Sure. I guess they could have in the offseason, but yeah, you know, so that's just to say that it's not a trade is not going to fall apart over $1 million if the prospect coming back is anybody that they value. So the Bruce trade, we'll see. I mean, Ryder Ryan, you know, I feel bad for the guy because he's kind of become symbolic of Mets fans' frustrations here. But he's an upside arm that is an A ball right now, and who knows? And you know, with Neil Walker, a player to be named later, it could be somebody you never ever hear of again. But at the same time, wouldn't you rather take the chance than just having Neil Walker play out the string here? And let's face it, they are very congested in the infield right now. Ahmed Rosario and Dom Smith have to play every day if they're going to be here.
Right.
Because I think they need a body of work going into next year so that you know whether these guys can take the job and run with it. So if that's the case, then you have Wilmer Flores, Asdrubal Cabrera. At the time, of course, you had Bruce and Walker in that infield too. But if TJ Rivera gets healthy, there are a lot of players in the mix for only four positions. So, you know, look, you got to clear the deck here a little bit. Take a chance on maybe these prospects, maybe one or two of them pan out, maybe none of them pan out. But
right.
I mean,
Gotta take a chance, right?
You're playing out the string. That's right. The reality.
Right. I definitely want, listen, you want to get it. Dom Smith and Ahmed Rosario have without a doubt earned their spot at this point, at this level, for the rest of the season. I mean, both of them were hitting over Dom Smith was hitting 330, I think, or Rosario was hitting just a shade under. You know, these guys earn their chance to come up and, you know, audition for a starting job next year. So there's no doubt about it. And you could see, I mean, you know, Rosario at this point, Rosario just oozes talent. I mean, you could see it in everything that he does, especially in the field. He made that jumping Jeter across the diamond one bounce throw to first, yesterday, I believe, and, you know, hit the game winning home run on Friday, and Dom Smith is, you could tell right off the bat he's got a real, you know, he's got a beautiful swing. I'm excited for the next two, you know, 7 weeks of the season to see these guys play.
Well, I think that's key for, you know, Mets fans too, is that you need to have something to be excited about here,
right,
and to get you to next season.
Right.
And look, there's no question that this didn't quite shake out the way it wanted to, you know, this year. That's obvious. But that being said, if you kind of look at where the Mets' window of contention lines up, it's not closed after 2017.
No question.
It's still very much wide open. This is more of a retooling than everything else. And if you look at where they've been susceptible, which is health, and obviously, you know, health has been the main issue.
Yeah.
But then if you look at the lack of flexibility and the really bad defense, I mean, you have a young starting pitching staff that needs the help. And you can't just throw out guys that are out of position, that have no range, that aren't good shortstops. You know, as Rubel Cabrera, he's not a good shortstop anymore.
Now, last year he was great. Just in 1 year, he completely lost his legs.
It's been, I mean, he wasn't good last year if you look at the metrics, but, you know, it looked like he made all the plays, and I think he was better last year, but if you go by defensive run saves, he was abysmal at shortstop last year, too.
Right.
I think the problem really here is that most people view this as, oh, God, this is the Mets starting over again. It's not.
Right.
It's, you're getting two plus defenders who can hit on your everyday lineup for the league minimum.
Right.
So now go and take that money and reinvest it. But I think what I think you'll probably get to here, and it's the huge gorilla in the room, is David Wright. We need an answer. We need to know what's going on here, and we need to know if he can contribute. And before they can really move on to the next stage, I think they need to figure out what they're doing at third base long term, and obviously that's all on David's shoulders.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I was going to get into next is that, you know, there are going to be a couple of spots on this team that have to be open, and there's not many. I mean, you basically, mm-hmm. I mean, you're thinking at this point that Dominic Smith is going to be able to play first. You're thinking that Rosario is going to take shortstop. You know, Cespedes is going to be in left. You know, Conforto is going to be in right. I'm assuming they're going to end up sticking with Travis d'Arnaud behind the plate, and then you have your pitching staff that's somewhat set for next year as well. So really you have spots open at second, third, and at center field. Do you see them actually filling those spots from free agency or the trade market, or are they going to dip back in and try and, you know, play TJ Rivera and Gavin Cecchini and Juan Lagares in those spots next year?
I have to be honest with you. I said this on the show last week, and I'm worried that this might be the conversation around this team in the offseason might be, we're going to be healthier next year. We're going to be more athletic. We're going to save more runs with Rosario and Smith in the lineup. So I think that what we're going to do is go in-house and look to fill our needs in-house, which means like maybe a platoon in center field of Lagares and Nimmo, which means maybe going with TJ Rivera or Wilmer Flores at one or two of the positions you mentioned. It might mean waiting around to see if David Wright can ever get healthy again. And if that's the case, they're going to be in a very sticky spot next year.
Absolutely.
You know, look, in fairness to them, what are they supposed to do at third base? I mean, if David Wright can play, which we don't know that he can, are they supposed to go out and sign Mike Moustakas? You know, I'm not 100% sure what option they have at third base until if David's retiring or if he isn't. But in center field, you know, you look at the premier center field free agent this year, and it's Lorenzo Cain, and he's on the wrong side of 30 already. Yeah. I mean, is this a guy you want to invest in? Maybe if you think your window is right this very second and not also 2 years from now. But to me, I think you have to kind of keep your options open because the free agent class after next, not only will you be losing Matt Harvey, which might not be that much of a loss, probably be losing Jerry Somilia, but also who is out there and available if David Wright no longer can contribute is going to be Manny Machado. And I think based on the way this team is constructed with a plus-plus defender at shortstop and Amed Rosario, I think you have to take a long, hard look and get into that sweepstakes. Now, there's a lot of time in between now and then, and obviously Mets fans would kind of drool over that left side of the infield if it were even possible. It's going to cost a lot of money. But if that's at all a thought in their mind, I'm not sure that they go all in for a free agent that, quite frankly, might not be, you know, carrying their weight a year or two into the contract.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you there. I mean, Cain is a guy who, you know, fits the need, as you said, right this minute. But in 3 years from now, is that going to be the case? Are they going to have to talk about moving him out of center field because he's not able to play the position at 33 and 34? So yeah, that's a definite question. Like you said, they need some clarity on the whole David Wright thing because Moustakas is a guy who definitely would fit into this, would fit into the culture, would fit into the locker room, and obviously would fit right into the lineup.
I agree with that. I think he's a great add if you can add him. But, you know, he plays a good third base. He's obviously a good contact hitter. He's had a nice power season this year. We've seen what he's done on a big stage. But again, you know, you can't do that if you're paying a guy $20 million, whether you're collecting insurance or not, that you have any plans on him coming back at any point. So,
right. The guy's captain of the team.
That's the biggest question for this team. And then obviously, how are they going to be healthier? Is it just going to be that they're going to have younger guys in the lineup, or is it going to be that there's going to be a fundamental shift around how this organization prepares their players to play baseball games and to make it through a full season?
That is my next bullet point, brother. Is there going to be that fundamental change in the way that that these guys train in the off season? Because it's apparent that everybody was jacking themselves up, you know, to hit home runs and to throw 112 miles an hour, and yet everyone decided to skip leg day, and we've had torn hamstrings and, you know, quads, and, you know, it's a joke at this point. You know, Cespedes, you know, just now is starting to get himself back, you know, to hitting the way that we know that he can, but, I mean, it was a lost 3 months for him, and then not having Walker in the lineup, I mean, you know, have the Mets seen enough? Has Sandy seen enough to say we need to change something internally?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's ridiculous, and even optimistic fans like me have to kind of look at each other and say, what's going on here? I mean, I know Ray Ramirez is kind of emblematic of the problem because he's the face of the problem. but in fairness to him, I mean, this is, what is he, is it Mike Barwis who's, you know, putting these guys through these ridiculous paces in their off-season training programs? Is it, you know, hospital special surgery? I don't know. That's who the Mets use, and that's a world-class facility. So it's not the people doing the surgeries, right? So what is going on? Is it just that people don't want to drink water? I mean, is it really just that Yoenis Cespedes doesn't like the taste of water? I can't believe that this is even coming out of my mouth. I don't even understand how this is really, honestly, my life as a baseball fan. Mm-hmm. But somehow it is, and every season it happens over and over again, and it's not, hey, we're snake bitten, baby. It's not that anymore. It's a systemic problem in the organization. So, look, Ray Ramirez might take the bullet. Maybe Mike Barwis takes the bullet. I don't know whose head this falls on, but there has to be a change. There has to be something different. There's got to be a reason why Willie Mays can play 162 games or 154 games or whatever, year in, year out, back in the 1950s where guys would smoke in between half innings, and somehow now with every supplement and every workout regime and all the whole nine yard workout regimen, the whole thing, that we're getting guys on the DL, you know, every 15 seconds. So, you know, the one thing I will say is I do think the 10-day DL fundamentally changes how teams DL people, but obviously that's not the Mets' problem this year. They've been hit with so many long-term injuries that something's got to give.
Well, that's been the problem, and it kind of leads into my next question is, you know, what's wrong with Steven Matz?
Well, you know, look, I think that there are physical issues there. I don't think we've ever seen Steven 100% right. Even, you know, right after he got drafted, obviously went through the Tommy John. What starts to concern me is how much this becomes a mental problem and not a physical one. Now, look, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a sports psychologist. I have never spoken a word to Steven Matz in my life, so I don't know what's going on between this guy's, you know, ears. I just worry, based on things you hear from people who are in the know, you know, reporters who talk to him, or, you know, just little comments from people, that you wonder, is there something going on here where it's a confidence thing? Is he just concerned about that something's maybe wrong in his elbow, wrong in his forearm, and maybe he's just not throwing his breaking stuff like he wants to or needs to? What is it? Is it just the way he's attacking hitters? I have no idea, and I'm not going to claim to know. But I'll certainly say that it hasn't been pretty. And, you know, when you look at the Mets' advantage in this division, which right now is, I mean, it belongs to the Washington Nationals and will, as long as Bryce Harper decides to play there, for as long as he decides to play there, unless something changes in New York, is, quite frankly, I mean, they were supposed to have five aces, right? Well,
right.
I count two. I count one who's on the shelf, and I'm going to give him a little bit of a break. because Noah Syndergaard has proven that he's an ace. He battled Madison Bumgarner on one of the biggest stages in baseball and came up just short.
Right.
And it wasn't really even his fault through, you know, through seven shutout. We forget how good Noah Syndergaard is because we haven't seen him in a while. And I think he's qualifies for the ace status. And then you have Jacob deGrom, who is the unquestioned ace of this staff.
Right.
So that's a pretty good start. But let's face it, Matt Harvey, we have no idea what he is
anymore. You don't even know what he is anymore, and it's a shame.
No clue. No clue. And you know, and you bring up Steven Matz, and it's the exact same thing. So, you know, Zach Wheeler's had a nice little season here in his first season back, but again, a guy who hasn't stayed on the field. So, look, I keep hearing about five aces or the four horsemen or whatever cute name you want to put on them. The bottom line is I'm just seeing Jacob deGrom and probably Noah Syndergaard, hopefully not doing many more cameos in TV shows. That's I'm hoping for less of that and more on the mound.
What, so, you don't want to see him slaying dragons? I mean, come on.
Look, I mean, whatever. I'm not a big Game of Thrones fan. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sure you're going to get flamed for that.
I'm here. What are you talking about? No, what are you kidding me? Anybody who watches Game of Thrones is watching it right now
Right. Don't worry. So anybody, I didn't offend anybody who's listening right now because no, everybody's watching it. Exactly.
Well, listen, man, I mean, I agree with you. DeGrom and Syndergaard are without a doubt the two, big pieces here. I guess we're going to have to see, maybe Harvey comes back, maybe he doesn't, but, we are going to wrap this up, man. We're just about out of time, but, Brian, just tell people where they could find you and tell them about where they could find the podcast.
Sure. My pleasure. So you can find me on Twitter at Brian Erney. It's BRIANERNI. And then the show, you can see us every Thursday at 6 o'clock live on facebook.com/the7line. And of course, if you want to listen to the audio, you can subscribe to it as a podcast. Go to orangeandbluething.com. You can get that link to our SoundCloud page. And then obviously, if you're an Apple user, just go into the podcast, search for Orange and Blue Thing, and we'll be there and you can subscribe to that and rate and subscribe and let us know what you think. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and it's a blast to work on, and I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Absolutely, Brian. Brother, hockey season's coming is all I can tell you. Thanks so much
for coming on
with us, and I will talk to you soon, man. Brian Erney of the Orange and Blue Thing podcast and the 7-Line Army. I am out of time. I will be back here next month. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your August. Take care, everyone.
Previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.